It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrich. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Getting into arguments with your partner doesn't mean your relationship is doomed to fail. In fact, if we do it right, conflict can actually strengthen our relationships. Our next guests are PhD clinical psychologists and relationship therapists, and in their new book, they dig into the right and wrong ways to fight with our significant other. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you and your significant other ever fight? Do you avoid conflict at all costs? Have you received any valuable relationship advice about relationship conflict that you'd like to share? Do you have questions about how to navigate conflict in relationships? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Julie Schwartz-Gottman is co-founder and president of the Gottman Institute. She's the lead author of the new book, Fight Right, How Successful Couples Turn Conflict into Connection. Julie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Rob. It's a pleasure to be here.
And John Gottman is co-founder of the Gottman Institute, co-author of Fight Right, and an alumnus of UW-Madison. John, welcome back to Wisconsin.
Oh, thank you, Rob.
Now, Julie,
really enjoyed. Yeah.
Julie, I think sometimes we think of, you know, an argument in a relationship as an inherently negative sign, but you really make the case in the book that's not true. Why is that?
Well, here's why. You know, a lot of people think, first of all, that anger is a bad thing, which it is not. In our research, what we really saw was the way that people express their anger makes all the difference. What we also saw in our research of 3,000 couples following them for as long as 20 years is that the successful couples who had long-lasting relationships did fight. They did have conflicts, but they used those conflicts as a way to really unearth something very important to their partner, and they also got to express what was really important to them. They did the conflicts in a really different way than the unsuccessful couples who ended up splitting up or staying unhappy in the relationship. So our research showed us that if conflicts are done right, thus Fight Right is the title, we really can use those conflicts as a royal road to understanding our partners.
And John, before we get into those lessons, I want to talk a little more about the research that you've been doing, as Julie just mentioned, for decades now. You two aren't just winging it here. Can you talk about how you have researched and watched couples as they talk about contentious issues to try to draw the conclusions you get to in the book?
Yeah, Rob. About 52 years ago, my colleague Robert Levinson and I designed a lab that synchronized the video time code. We filmed two people talking about an issue, talking about how their day went or a positive topic. And Julie and I designed an apartment lab where newlyweds lived for 24 hours, and we filmed them while they were awake. And in these labs, we really not only videotaped them, but we also synchronized that to the physiology that was going on, their heart rate, their blood velocity, their respiration, how much they were sweating and moving around, all these measures together. And then we had couples rate how they felt after each conversation. So they would watch the video again and turn this dial that went from very negative to very positive. And in the beginning, we just sent them home. We didn't know how to help anybody. But we tried to get representative samples in the places that we worked and followed them for a long period of time. But in the past 26 years, Julie and I have used our ability to predict the future of a relationship with over 90% accuracy, used that information to really help couples and tested our interventions. And so they really do work.
Julie, I want to get into one of the biggest mistakes, let's call them four of the biggest mistakes. You talk about people in that moment of an argument in a relationship falling prey to the four horsemen of bad fighting. What are they?
Yes, we call them the four horsemen of the apocalypse, doom and disaster. So here's what they are. The first one is criticism, and that shows up particularly when bringing up an issue, but can occur anytime during the fight. And criticism means blaming a problem on a personality flaw of your partner. For example, saying something like, "You're just too lazy to clean up the kitchen." You know, there's the blaming and criticism. The second horseman is contempt, and contempt is the worst of all of them. It's like sulfuric acid on a relationship. Similar to criticism, again, it's pointing out a flaw of the partner, but doing so from a position on high, very superior. So cutting sarcasm is an example, calling your partner bad names or mocking your partner. All of those are expressions of contempt. You wouldn't even think of getting your hands wet to clean the kitchen, would you? You know, there's contempt for you, right? And contempt not only predicts the demise of a relationship, it also predicts the demise of the listener's immune system. We saw that the number of times a person heard contempt from their partner in 15 minutes predicted how many infectious illnesses they would have in the next four years. Isn't that incredible? So the third horseman that doesn't work well in a fight is defensiveness. And defensiveness is, you know, one of the most common of the horsemen. When we feel attacked, either by criticism or contempt, our natural instinctive response is going to be defensiveness, where we either counterattack by saying something, "Oh, yeah, well, you didn't pay the bills on time," or whining, "I did too do the dishes," you know, that kind of thing. That's defensiveness. And the fourth one we call stonewalling. That's when one partner completely shuts down in the middle of a conversation and stops giving the other person any sign that they've heard what that person is saying. They don't nod their heads. They don't say little things like, oh, I see. None of that. What we discovered about stonewalling is that many people who shut down like this are actually in fight or flight. That's where the physiological measures that John just mentioned come in. They're in fight or flight while sitting there because they're feeling so attacked. Their heart rates will be over 100 beats a minute, sometimes as high as 180 beats a minute. The only thing to do there is to take a break of a specific kind.
Talking to Julie Schwartz Gottman and John Gottman, their new book is called Fight Right: How Successful Couples Turn Conflict into Connection. They're sharing decades of their work as clinical psychologists and relationship therapists. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, maybe an experience to share. That's 800-642-1234. We were just talking, John, about the four horsemen there. Now, here's a rule that could point us maybe in a more positive direction, the 5-to-1 rule, which I'd heard of, but I didn't know exactly how it worked. What is the 5-to-1 rule?
Well, it's become real famous in Seattle. I recently went to a Starbucks and a guy drove by and rolled his window down and said, "Hey, 5-to-1, right?" And this is our magic ratio that Bob Levinson and I discovered, is if you take all of the things somebody said during a conflict discussion and sort them into two bins, all the positive things that you can do, like nodding your head and listening and saying, interesting, good point, you know, and being affectionate, having a shared sense of humor, take all the seconds of positivity and divide it by all the seconds where they've been defensive or hostile or counterattacking, all those negative things. The masters of relationship, the people who stay together liking each other and enjoying the marriage, those people had a ratio of 5 positive to 1 negative, which really surprised the heck out of me. I thought in a great relationship, they'd be balanced, you know, equal, the ratio would be 1. But no, it's 5-to-1 in the Masters. And in the disaster couples, couples who either broke apart or stayed together unhappily, that ratio was 0.8 to 1. Just a little bit more negativity than positivity.
And a key point, Julie, is, and you address this in the book, why we fight, what we're trying to accomplish here. The correct answer is not to win the argument. How do we flip that around and try to get something positive out of that conflict?
First of all, we really need to understand that a lot of times what we're fighting about is not necessarily obvious. It's not the issue on the surface. Many times it may be something way down deep, a hidden dream that the person has about how life should be, or a value they have, or some background history. And what can happen with conflict is that when you pause and don't move into trying to solve it right away, but instead ask each person a series of questions that we describe in the book that really deepen your understanding of your partner's position on the issue, what ends up happening is you come out of that particular discussion with a much deeper understanding of your partner's position on the issue, and perhaps more compassion for them as well. After that, you can move into compromise in a much more gentle way because you have much greater understanding of what's really important to your partner, and you've had a chance to say the same in the midst of this discussion.
We're talking with clinical psychologist Julie Schwartz-Gottman and John Gottman about their new book. It's called Fight Right, How Successful Couples Turn Conflict into Connection. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you had that one issue that keeps coming up, a point of contention in a relationship? How did you navigate it? Did you dodge around it and ignore it? Or did you take it head on? Did it go well? Do you have questions for our guest about how to make conflict something productive in a relationship? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with psychologists and relationship researchers Julie Schwartz-Gottman and John Gottman. Their new book is called Fight Right, How Successful Couples Turn Conflict into Connection. You can join in with advice of your own to share an experience or questions for our guests at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go to your calls now. DJ is with us in Stevens Point. DJ, hi. What did you want to tell us about?
Well, I had the first date with my spouse 40 years ago this weekend.
Wow.
Right, for Valentine's Day. The best advice that I received before we got married was always put the other person's point of view and the other person first. And that was pretty good advice. I know that we have had less than a handful of screaming or, you know, yelling at each other fights in the 36 years we've been married, but doesn't mean we don't still have conflict. When we get angry, we will talk. If I am about to say something that I know that I will regret and she will be angry about, I just hold my tongue if I can, and if I can't do that, I walk away for a while. When we see each other later, I think for both of us, the thing that happens ultimately, there will be, you reach out, hold a hand, something, whether it's that night next to each other once we've gone to bed without talking for a few hours or whatever, but just that contact, a little bit of a warm touch and not screaming at the other person.
DJ, thanks a lot for that call. I'm hearing DJ tick off some of the things I remember reading in the book. And Julie, I'll start by throwing this to you. You've mentioned sometimes maybe you do need to take that break. You offer some very specific stuff about how to step away, how long to step away. Share advice when somebody's in that position DJ was talking about, like, I don't want to say something that's going to do more damage. Need to take a little time here.
Wonderful question, Rob. So, yes, when somebody really feels flooded with emotion, when their heart rates perhaps are racing, when they really feel attacked, then it's time to take a break. So a specific break looks like this. First, a person says, I need a break, and they also say what time they'll come back to continue the conversation so that the other person doesn't feel abandoned or rejected. Very important to give that time when they'll come back. The amount of time a break should last is typically 20 to 30 minutes. The longest a break should last is 24 hours. It never should be longer than that. Otherwise, it feels like punishment. Then, when you go into separate spaces where you can't hear each other, you can't see each other, it really is a break from the conversation, don't think about the fight. Because if you do, you'll keep feeling stress. Your body will keep pumping adrenaline and cortisol into your bloodstream, and your body will not have a chance to calm down. So do something self-soothing, like reading a book or a magazine, listening to music, yoga, meditation, any of those things that takes your mind off the fight and helps you to calm down. We call that self-soothing. Finally, go back to your partner at the time you agreed to, and hopefully you can continue the conversation at that point with a much calmer body and brain. And your brain, incidentally, will work much, much better than it does in fight or flight, to where you can creatively problem solve and listen and understand well.
Thanks again for that call, DJ. We'll go to Julie now in Milwaukee. Julie, hi. What did you want to tell us about?
Hi. Well, thank you. I guess the problem my partner and I have, we're not married, but we've been together almost 7 years. I admittedly do have ADHD. I don't use it as an excuse. I really, truly don't. But what happens is I go to his house and he immediately starts picking on me. And a lot of times it's sort of like that hostile humor, but then it doesn't become at all hostile humor. It becomes just hostile. And I'm afraid to even begin to talk because he'll use it against me somehow. And the thing is, I do get emotionally reactive because he does start arguing and then he screams. He screams at me and I'll tell him, please don't scream at me. It doesn't help. And if you continue, I'll leave. I've only been able to actually leave on maybe one or two occasions because then he said, well, you're just avoiding it. But I think I need to set boundaries about not letting him scream at me, not putting me down, telling me that my friends don't like the characteristics that they actually do like in me, which is, you know, my energy, my outgoingness, my wanting to have fun, because those are things he dislikes the most.
Julie, thanks for the call. This sounds bad to me, John, and we can't necessarily counsel people on a quick phone call. Do you have thoughts? Somebody in this situation, this sounds more like more than an easy to resolve conflict, or even a conflict maybe even worth resolving. I don't know. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it sounds like Julie's living under the situation we would call verbal abuse. And that is a very dangerous kind of situation. It really does destroy people's self-confidence. It makes them feel unloved. It makes them feel really anxious. And it's a bad climate for any relationship. So it'd be really important for Julie to set boundaries, but also to reflect back what it is that this guy makes her feel, and to say, you know, if you have an issue to talk to me about, use a much more gentle approach where you talk about yourself and what you feel. Don't talk about me. Talk about you. and tell me what you need. And I'd be happy to meet your needs if I understand what they are. But when you describe me and you describe me in such hostile, negative terms, it really makes me want to leave the relationship. And I would make that a condition for staying, that he stop being verbally abusive.
Julie, thanks for calling in. I feel like you probably deserve better. In our last couple minutes, Julie, for people who have what feels like an intractable disagreement of whether to have kids, whether to move to that new city or something like that, but they know they like each other and want to stay together, how can they manage an issue like that? Very common, you write in the book.
Yeah, you know, so issues like having kids can really break up a relationship if each person feels adamant about their position. One person really wants to have kids, the other person really doesn't want to have kids. There you have a situation where, you know, you can't have compromise. You can't have half a kid, right? So that's not going to work. In terms of geography, geography is sometimes a little bit more solvable, but it really depends on the flexibility of each person. Let me give you an example. We had a couple in a workshop who were retiring, and one person wanted to sail around the world. The other person wanted to go live on the farm that had been in their family for over a century, and that farm was located in Iowa. So how do you sail around the world from Iowa? You can't do it, right? So through a beautiful conversation, they decided on a compromise where they would sail for 1 year, get as far as they could, and then put the boat up on a dry dock and come back, go to Iowa, live on the farm for a year. And after 2 years, make a decision about what to do next.
Excellent.
So there are still possibilities for geography.
Thanks to our guests today, Julie Schwartz-Gottman and John Gottman, clinical psychologists, relationship researchers. Their new book is called Fight Right: How Successful Couples Turn Conflict into Connection. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.